Hi, this is Hugh Cornwell, and welcome to this Mr. DeMille FM podcast. If you have any comments, suggestions, or simply want to get in touch, then please email info@mrdemillefm.com. This episode is a look at some of the most successful comic books made into film. I hope you enjoy the show. These days, there's a glut of feature films that are adaptations of comics. Multi-million dollar franchises are built on the various series that have been made from successful comics. They have huge revenues generated not only by the films, but by the spin-off merchandise sales. I have to say, I'm not a fan of this genre, but I have seen films adapted from comic strips that I'd like to recommend. The first comic book was The Glasgow Looking Glass in 1826, but you could say the origins began much earlier than that, perhaps in the Bayeux Tapestry, or even cave paintings from 50,000 years ago. Louis Friard, a French filmmaker of the silent era, made a phenomenal 630 films, and chief amongst his films, there were three series called Fantomas, Les Vampires, and Judex. They were episodic films that people loved to follow. One of them, Judex, was remade in 1963 by Georges Franju, and I was surprised to find it had a lot in common with later comic book films. A vigilante with conjuring skills abducts a banker to make him pay back the people he swindled. But then a scheming family governess, played exquisitely by Francine Berge, kidnaps his daughter and the plot gets thicker. For a start, there's a wealth of special gadgets to feast on. The plot twists are fast and furious, and the whole film looks great throughout. There's a surreal atmosphere about the whole thing that draws you in, as if you're in a dream. Music was provided by Maurice Jarre. The famous comic Dick Tracy was brought to the big screen in 1990 and boasted an incredible cast. Al Pacino stole the picture as the villain Big Boy Caprice. Warren Beatty starred as Dick Tracy and directed too. The characterizations are pretty spot on, although I thought Madonna doesn't quite look or act right, but she was fine with the song and dance moments. Some of the makeup is over the top, but overall it's a fair adaptation. There's a dark fight sequence at the end worth waiting for, and William Forsythe's look is especially authentic. Stephen Sondheim provided the songs and music and collected an Oscar for his work. Pound for pound, you'll get more from the black and white version made in 1945, running at 61 minutes, which has Morgan Conway playing Tracy and Mike Mazurki as the killer Splitface, plus a young Jane Greer who gets to walk all over Dick Tracy. Delicious. It was followed by three more films and had been preceded by four others, starting in 1937, some of them in serial form, with a different actor, Ralph Byrd, playing Tracy in most of them. They have a flavour more like the actual strip and are set in real sets rather than the comic book sets of Beatty's version. Back in 1966, director Joseph Losey took on the task of bringing Modesty Blaze to the screen, and what a fine job he did. The lovely Monica Vitti starred, with Terence Stamp as a loyal sidekick and Dirk Bogarde playing the most camp villain of all time. Terence Stamp had turned down Alfie to appear in this. This is a roller coaster of a ride, taking in a lot of different locations. Losey shows his eye for a good composition throughout, and there's a wonderful shot through Dirk Bogarde's cocktail glass, obviously taken directly from the strip. The film wasn't a success at the box office, but I think it needs to be looked at again. Harry Andrews appears as the quintessential British intelligence chief.
shadow on your bedroom wall. She is the dream you never found. But then you'll find no time to dream at all whenever modesty's around. Modesty, modesty. She'll strike you dumb with just a single glance, or just a single glancing blow. Exactly why she slays so many men, no man alive will ever know. Modesty, modesty. She'll turn your head, though she might use a judo pole. And on her shoulder's a chip made of solid gold. She'll strike you dumb with just a single glance, or just a single glancing blow. Exactly why she slays so many men, no man alive will ever know. Modesty, modesty.
Terence Stamp and Harry Andrews appeared together again in Superman in 1978, directed by Richard Donner, who was fresh off directing The Omen. Marlon Brando and Gene Hackman starred with Margot Kidder, and an unknown actor called Christopher Reeve played Superman. The film was so successful on release it topped the box office chart for 13 consecutive weeks. Marlon Brando ended up being paid $14 million for 10 minutes of screen time. Whew. It became the highest-grossing film Warner's had ever made. Mario Puzo of The Godfather fame created the original screenplay, which was too expensive to shoot, so it was cut down to size. Tragically, in 1995, Christopher Reeve suffered a terrible horse riding accident and became paralysed and confined to a wheelchair.
Thank you.
Sin City in 2005 was directed by Robert Rodriguez, Quentin Tarantino and Frank Miller. This is one of the best adaptations of a comic strip in my view. It doesn't let up for a moment. It's filmed almost totally in black and white and has a distinct visual style. Clive Owen, Mickey Rourke, Bruce Willis and Jessica Alba star amongst others. It makes very exciting viewing. Now I'd like to introduce you to a very unusual film called Crumb, related to this show. Robert Crumb is an iconic comic book artist who became idolised in the 60s for his psychedelic cartoons and characters like Mr. Natural and Fritz the Cat. This film is a portrait of him and his family and what an unusual family they are. Crumb remains totally uncompromising throughout regarding his art and his family, and although he is obviously a very strange man, his attitude is commendable. There are genuine comic moments, and it's a fascinating film. The arrival of Watchmen in 2009 was a big moment, as the graphic novel had been dogged by development problems for 20 years. It's nearly 3 hours long, but I guess it had a lot to cover. It's an interesting premise involving an alternative history of the world from 1985 onwards, which is a Philip K. Dick plot device for his novel The Man in the High Castle. The character development is good, and the visuals are eye-catching. Chris Nolan has said it came out ahead of its time, and with the growth of the market for comic book films, he's probably right. It's directed by Zack Snyder and stars Jackie Earle Haley, Billy Crudup, and Patrick Wilson.
Now I've heard there was a secret chord that David played, and it pleased the Lord. But you don't really care for music, do you?
I was brought up on the Popeye cartoons on TV as a kid, but it started out as a comic book in the 1930s. Robert Altman made a film of it in 1980, starring the great Robin Williams as Popeye in his first movie role, and Shelley Duvall, of course, as Olive Oil. It was panned by the critics on release, which is a shame, as it was very ambitious. The plot moves at a slow pace, and perhaps there was too much music on offer during its two-hour length. The songs were written by Harry Nilsson, and the two lead performances were very strong. The New York Times described it as a thoroughly charming, immensely appealing mess of a movie, often high-spirited and witty, occasionally pretentious and flat, sometimes robustly funny, and frequently unintelligible. It is, in short, a very mixed bag. It was made entirely in Malta, where they built the set, and it spiralled over budget, and Robert Evans, the producer, ordered director Altman to return to Hollywood with what he had shot already in the can. It made $60 million worldwide with a budget of $20 million, so not a box office flop by any means.
And all at once I knew at once, I knew. For once in life, I finally felt that someone needed me.
One of my favourite comics was Sad Sack, about a GI who was a disaster area. Whatever he touched, something went wrong with it. Jerry Lewis played him in a feature made in 1957, and it's pretty good. Jerry Lewis's slapstick brand of comedy isn't for everyone, and I wasn't sure if I was going to like his take on my favourite comic character, but I was pleasantly surprised. He plays him very well, albeit a bit too happy-go-lucky. Pilar Lorre turns up halfway through the movie, surprisingly, as a Moroccan knife thrower. Burt Bacharach and Hal David wrote the theme tune.
I take her dancing and step on her shoes. I fix her toaster and I blow a fuse. Then I get seasick when we take a cruise. I'm the genuine original, first edition copy of Sad Sack. How can I make her love me when I take her driving and I get a flat? I take the milk out and bring in the cat. And then I sit down on top of her hat. I'm the genuine original, first edition copy of Sad Sack. How can I make her love me when I drop my ashes all over her clothes and I misplace her keys? Then for forgiveness I send her a rose, and roses always make her sneeze. The lamp is so bright, I pull out the plug. Her arms then open to give me a hug. I run to kiss her and trip on the rug. I'm the genuine original, first edition copy of Sad Sack. The original Sad Sack. I'm the genuine original, first edition copy of Sad Sack.
But saving the best until last, The Incredible Hulk, in my opinion, is the best movie adaptation from a comic that's ever been made. It came out in 1977 as the pilot episode for a TV series, and it really is a fabulous standalone film. Bill Bixby, who plays Dr. David Banner, was the only choice for the part by director Kenneth Johnson. Arnold Schwarzenegger was approached to play the Hulk, but he was busy on Conan the Barbarian at the time and recommended Lou Ferrigno for the role. The original comic was created by Stan Lee, who became creative consultant for the series. Interestingly, he said he was inspired by Frankenstein's monster, Jekyll and Hyde, and also The Fugitive. The film runs at a neat 90 minutes and is a real treat. There you have it, my pick of the films that started out as comics. Thinking about it, there's a great similarity between comics and the storyboards that directors use when preparing to shoot a movie. They're a shot-by-shot visual guide to a film. I hope you've enjoyed hearing about my selection. Maybe some of them you like too. Until next time.